Welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today is David Holly and Mike Gregg. In this episode, we will be previewing the upcoming match for Fulham against Bolton on the road. Before that, we'll have another edition of the Cottage Talk Controversy Roundtable, which includes us debating questions I put on the Cottage Talk Facebook page for the fans to comment on. And today, we have two very interesting topics to break down, as always. Before we do anything, I have to bring on my co-host to the show first. David, how you doing, my friend?
Hi, Russ. Good to be back again. Cold slowly going as well, thankfully.
Yeah, listen, it's good to have you back, my friend. I'm looking forward to doing the show. I'm looking out the window, and I think I have probably in excess of 3 to 4 feet at this point with all the snow that we've had over the course of several weeks. It's crazy the amount of snow I'm looking out, David, but so I'm glad we could do this show today.
I'm jealous. I'd love to see that much snow.
Well, I actually put a picture of it, David, on the Cottage Talk Facebook page. That'll give you an idea of how much snow we have, and it keeps adding up. The snow probably won't be stopping until tomorrow morning, so it just continues to add on. It's crazy. But what's great is that I have my family at home there in the other room, and I have you on the line, and I also have my other co-host on the line to talk Fulham. And Mr. Gregg, how you doing? Thank you for wanting to come on and joining us today.
Yeah, no problem, Russ. Looking forward to it. I saw your picture of all the snow, and like David, it'd be nice for us to have some snow like that one day.
Trust me, Mike, you don't want this amount of snow. That's all I'm going to say. You know, again, a little snow is great, but this much snow is almost to the point of unbearable. You know, it's funny. We're lucky here. We have really good snow removal, and they're doing a great job. It just, you know, when you look out the window, it just continues to snow. It's just been nuts. But it is nice. You know, it is nice. It's just a little too much right now. I'm kind of sick of it at this point, but it is what it is. Mother Nature is making her statement in my area for some reason. All right, guys, let's get into it. And, you know, again, this is going to be a shortened show. I don't expect this to go much more than an hour, but I do have some really interesting topics for us to discuss today. I put up a couple questions in the Cottage Talk Controversy Roundtable. I'm going to start with my first one I put up there. Here's the first question, David. I'll start with you. Who was the most valuable player during the Europa League run for Fulham all the way through to the final, including the final, I should say, not through to the final, including the final? And what's interesting, David, we have a ton of different comments on this, so I'm curious your thoughts. Who was the most valuable player for this entire run?
This is so difficult. It really is, because at different stages, each player has their own sort of, you know, unique memories. Obviously, you could look at people like Simon Davis for the goal he scored in the semi-final and the final. You could look at Zoltan Gira, who was pretty good throughout, playing in that kind of cam second striker role, actually. Obviously, the winner against Hamburg and some other vital goals. Of course, Bobby Zamora, you know, he really came into his own. I mean, a cracker against Shakhtar Donetsk and some very important goals. You know, 20 seconds against Wolfsburg, for example. It was probably his lack of fitness at the end which maybe cost us ultimately. Same you could say for Damien Duff, pretty good throughout. The interesting thing is, obviously, Dempsey will be remembered for that Juventus goal, but Dempsey was quite often a sub in that team because Roy preferred Davis on the left and Duff on the right in those ones. Hangland, of course, a rock throughout, as was Hughes, Schwarzer. It's really, really difficult to pick. I mean, if I had to exclude people, I would probably exclude people like Danny Murphy because he was a silly boy against Shakhtar away and got himself banned. So I just didn't take the gloss off it. And in fact, it was actually Danny Murphy in the final that kicked the ball out that led to their winning goal. He was just dead on his feet, actually. So for me, I don't know. I must admit, I think because I was impressed of what a renaissance he had with us at the club, I would have to tend to go to someone like Zamora, because just look at the goals he scored. It's like against Juventus, against Wolfsburg, at home and away. I think he offered something to the team that we've really missed since he went, that ability to hold play up. And he worked so well in tandem with Damien Duff. Again, look at the goal at home against Wolfsburg. I mean, Konchesky put the ball into him, and he just stood there like a rock and shielded it until Duff got there and banged it in. But Duff used to come along the right wing. He used to play a ball up to Zamora. Zamora would hold it so well. So I'm actually going to go for Zamora, much as it's difficult, because I think they're all very worthy. He's going to be my pick just. And as I say, had he been fit in the final, I think we could have won it.
That's actually a very good point there, David. And, you know, again, very good analysis there. You know, again, the more that you kept talking about Bobby Zamora, the more you were convincing me on that. And it's funny because one of the reasons why I wanted to bring up this question, you know, it's funny. February 18th, which is not that far away, will be 5 years until we actually played against Shakhtar Donetsk at Craven Cottage in the Europa League. In that run, that's where it really began for me. I mean, obviously we got through the group stages, but it really kicked in when we played Shakhtar Donetsk at Craven Cottage, and it got me thinking, let's bring this up. It's been 5 years. Oh, it's been 5 years. It's crazy it's been that long. But I wanted to look back and really just talk about this because I enjoyed it so much. I know you guys did as well. And but the number of comments I've gotten on this, guys, so many people did as well, and they all have their different players, so that's why I found it interesting. Mike, I'm going to go to you. What are your thoughts? David actually brings up a great one, and Bobby Zamora, some reasons why for him he was the MVP. Do you agree, or do you have someone else in mind?
I do have someone else in mind, but David sort of touched on a number of points I was going to say. I mean, what's forgotten about that is how many players we had to use over those 19 games, and I don't think we ever really, you know, got the respect in a way of how many games we had to play to get to that final. So the whole squad was used, and they all pretty much all had their moments. I mean, even someone like Bjorn Riise, you know, he played like 12 games out of those, and, you know, he contributed as well. But Zamora with his goals, and, you know, the back four, which hardly changed once we got into the group in later stages. So, I mean, there's a lot of people there, Schwarzer as well. But yeah, I mean, I'm going to go with Gira, and the reason I'm going to go with Gira
okay.
is he's one of my favourite players, even before he joined Fulham, and it was just because of an injury he found himself playing in that role behind Zamora. But when you look at the goals he scored, how important they were. So I mean, if I just go through those, I mean, he in the group stages, I mean, he got the third goal at Basel to put us 3-1 up, and eventually we won 3-2, and that was that got us through that group stage, because if they'd, you know, got into the game and won that, or I think even drawn it, we would have not qualified. So he scored an important goal there, and then of course we can remember the goal in the semi-final where we all went mental, and then, you know, he did get two goals in the Juventus game. I mean, people forget that. You know, Dempsey's the one who got the headlines with that great goal and that great winner. But, you know, Gira got a penalty and the second goal as well. So throughout the run, for me, Gira, with his European experience as well, and because he never replicated it in the league, absolutely not. But that run, for me, is Gira's competition and showed his class in it. And so I would say he was the most valuable player over the course of the campaign. And I agree with David. We all, and I think pretty much everyone's sort of view is we just ran out of steam come the final. But you know, it was a great trip, and it'd be, you know, great to get back into some kind of cup run again one day. But for me, yeah, Gira was the man.
You know, it's funny, Mike. Many are going to agree with you. I'm going to be reading the comments shortly, and some are going to agree with David, and there are going to be some other names as well. And what's great about looking back at this is, you know, again, it's 5 years. I thought it'd be great to really just talk about this because it means so much to me and obviously to you guys as well and to all the Fulham supporters. And let's just talk about, you know, again, there's so much going on this season. Let's talk about a fun subject, and this is a fun subject to talk about. And we might talk a little bit more about that as the season goes on, you know, again, when they play, when it'll be 5 years since they played Juventus, 5 years since they played Hamburg, maybe we'll touch upon it again, because I just think, you know, there's no reason why we can't look back at the past. This, to me, is something that I wanted to look at, and I'm glad that that the Fulham supporters have really, you know, turned out, you know, in great numbers here to share their comments on it. You guys gave, like I said, two great names. You know, it's funny. I'm actually, believe it or not, I'm going to have to go with you, David, because I think Bobby Zamora was so vital, but I could see why Mike is going with Zoltan Gerrard. I don't think you can go wrong with either one, but I'm going to lean towards Bobby Zamora, you know, just against some of the goals he scored and just his hold-up play was so huge during this run. So I'm going to go with Bobby Zamora, but you can't go wrong with Zoltan Gerrard. All right, so I'm gonna read through these, and then we'll talk about it again. We'll see exactly what the Fulham supporters say. And believe it or not, it's just not going to be Zoltan Gerrard and Bobby Zamora. And I'll start with our co-host, Michael Connor. He said Zoltan Gerrard. Martin Atkins said Damien Duff. Chris Cox said Zoltan Gerrard. Aaron as Arnott says Gerrard was so good. Paul Terry says Gerrard. Brendan Cronin said most people will say Gerrard, and he was immense. But I thought Hanglin was a massive player for us in that campaign. Very interesting. Steve Leahy says Gerrard, although if Bobby and Duffers were fully fit on the night, I reckon the final might have been ours. You know, again, that's something that you guys are already talking about. James Dowden, one of our co-hosts, for me it was Duff. Some of the best football he has ever played. Alex Sainor, Hangeland. Harriet Oglethorpe, I would say Gerrard that campaign. Robert Cummins, Gerrard. Brendan O'Connor, Bobby Zamora. Ciarán Elster, if I had to choose, I would go for Big Bretta. Gareth Brooks goes, Dempsey simply for the goal. Without it, you know. Again, we can go on about the goal. Wayne Dyer, Dempsey for the goal against Juve. Interesting. John Mason, got to go Gerrard, but they were all immense. Ben Hardwick, I think Bobby because the opposite defenses couldn't handle his style of play. This is what you were talking about, David. Plus, he scored 9 goals in the contest, including one amazing one against Donetsk, which I thought was the best team bar Madrid. You know, it's funny. I would agree with Ben on that. I actually thought Shakhtar Donetsk, besides Atletico Madrid, I thought they were the best team for him to play. So, you know, again, I thought it was a huge deal that they beat Shakhtar Donetsk. Very good of you, Ben, for mentioning that. Jason Gaddy said, Gerrard played with so much heart that season. I still miss him. I still miss him, too. Damon Rahman, I actually find it hard to choose, but Dempsey's chip was a very memorable experience for me, so he's going with Dempsey. Graham Gurr says Dempsey. James Costin, Gerrard massive. Tony Miles, Simon Davis, Jack Taylor. Lots of players that we wouldn't have done it without, but I'd say Zamora. Steve Butters, Zamora, because he was still underrated, awesome playmaker. Emmy Nikoloff, Dempsey, Eden Gordon, Gerrard, Hanglin, Duff, all the height of their powers at the time. So Eden's gonna give it to 3 different players. And finally, Alexander Axtell, Zoltan Bretta, Bobby Damien, and Clint were the main headline players for the campaign. Obviously, he couldn't choose either. All right, guys. David, what are your thoughts about what the Fulham supporters shared on who was their MVP?
Well, obviously, had Jack Grimmer been available, Mike would have plumped for him, wouldn't you, Mike? But I've got to say, I don't want to upset anyone, but I don't agree with Dempsey, even though he scored a wonderful goal and he's been a great player for us. Because I said before, he didn't figure as much in that run. He was literally a substitute. I mean, even in the final, he was a substitute.
Correct.
Because as I say, Roy Prom favoured Davis and Duff as the wide positions. The only time Dempsey played was normally to come on as a sub. And I understand why Gerrard. I mean, because Gerrard, for me also, like Mike said, I don't think he really did it in the league for us. I didn't really rate him. Because I remember him starting the first match of the season against Hull, playing on that wide left position. He took Dempsey's place. And I didn't think it was much of a trade-up. I thought it was a trade-down, if anything, because he was... I don't think he was suited to playing there. But when he was moved inside, it's almost a Brian Ruiz situation again. He was a lot more effective inside there. And it showed what a clever player he was, because he didn't have, I don't think, the most pace, but he didn't need it. But on the wing, you need it a bit more, you know. But Dempsey's bustling style was a lot better. So, for me, Gerrard was one of my choices, but I don't think Gerrard would have achieved what he did without Zamora to hold it up for him. And those two worked together very, very effectively in Europe. But Zamora, you know, he came to Fulham and he had this reputation for being, you know, not a bit wasteful as well, not being a very accurate striker. But in Europe, he was brilliant. And as I said, his style, you know, they just couldn't handle it, this big, strong presence up front. And I remember when we played, you know, Wolfsburg, for example, everyone was raving about Edin Dzeko being worth all this money and big money move. And compared to Zamora, he was nothing. In that game, Zamora was 10 times the player that Dzeko was. Against Juventus,
I remember,
you know,
David, that's a very good point to compare him against Dzeko.
You know, and against Juventus, he bullied like Cannavaro and everything, and people like this. You know, they were stuck. Okay, we were lucky. Juventus had their third choice goalkeeper, and they had Uncle Fester in goal from the Adams family.
I remember that.
If you remember, yeah. We were lucky they didn't have Buffoonin or whatever he's called, but, you know, Uncle Fester it was, wasn't it, that guy? But still, you know, he bullied them around, and for me, you know, and that goal against, you know, Donetsk, it took my breath away. I still remember it now, you know. And okay, that was with Gira. If you remember that game, Gira scored very early on for Fulham, and you've got to say Uncle Fester should have done a lot better. It was a weak goal, but we got that hedge. And then the second goal, it was a little flick from Gira to Zamora. And Zamora hit it on his wrong foot, his right foot, an absolute beauty. And you remember that? And they were a great side. They were probably the best footballing side I've seen at the Cottage almost ever. Not just in the Premier League. The only downside they had, Donetsk, was they had no height. They were no threat whatsoever at corners and things like that, because they were all kind of fairly short Brazilians. They had loads of Brazilians in the team.
I remember.
Their football was fantastic. I would say they were a better team than Madrid. Perhaps Madrid was slightly more rounded, but if anything, Hamburg were just as good, and we beat Hamburg, and that's why it was a disappointment, because over two legs and with fit players, I think we could have seen off Madrid even. But Donetsk, they blew us away, and I thought, you know, how did we get away with that? Not only did we beat them at home, to come away with a point or a draw away at Donetsk
as well.
But for me, definitely, you know, I think there were some very good choices there, and there are. I say Dempsey, I would rule out. I would go for Hanglund. I'd go for Hughes. I would go for Schwarzer. I'd go for the regulars above Dempsey in this one. Duff as well, Gira. But for me, Zamora just tips it.
Okay, fantastic. And Mike, I want to go to you. I want to get your thoughts on Dempsey that David brought up. But I also want to ask you about Shakhtar Donetsk, because again, this was brought up with some of the comments. Because I always thought during this run, and David just brought it up, I thought, you know, again, in my time of watching Fulham, you guys go much farther back, I thought they were the best side that I've seen play at Craven Cottage. You know, again, I wasn't there, but obviously watching them play at Craven Cottage. And, you know, again, I guess you could make the argument because Atletico Madrid were better because they won the final. But just a team that I watched play against Fulham at Craven Cottage, I thought it was Shakhtar Donetsk, and I don't think they get as much credit as they deserve. I'm curious your thoughts about Dempsey and also about Shakhtar Donetsk.
I tend to agree with David on Dempsey. I mean, he started a few games and was sub. You know, he did score that goal, and he'll forever go down as a legend for that particular goal. But it's also harsh to say on any player that they shouldn't be included, because I think throughout the squad, from the best to the players we didn't rate, they all contributed. Even in those early rounds and those early group stages where Roy was changing the team a lot. But I don't think you could really put Dempsey as the most valuable when you consider Zamora's goals and also Gira's goals. And I mean, we didn't keep that many clean sheets throughout the run, so I don't think you would be looking at, you know, the defence, although, you know, there's lots of rear guard action at times. And that takes us to the Shakhtar game, where I wouldn't say they were the best team I ever saw. I mean, I don't know if David would agree, but I think the Arsenal team, which blew us away in the first couple of years when we were in the Premier League at home, they were the best side I've ever seen play at Craven Cottage. But Shakhtar kept the ball and passed it around the best I've ever seen any team do it. I mean, that first half hour, I know we were one up, but me and my old man were watching it, and people around us, and our jaws were... mouth was wide open. We just couldn't believe how they kept the ball and how we were going to keep them out. And certainly it was football I hadn't seen played by any team. And we got away with that somehow. And even, you know, then we went away to their place and got the draw, you know. So
it's crazy.
You can keep the ball as much as you like. You know, it's that old thing. I like possession stats, but it's what you do with it. And, you know, they kept the ball... I don't know the stats, but I suspect it would have been about 75-80% for that first half hour.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous. But yeah, you know, Shakhtar were the best team at keeping the ball I've ever seen. And yeah, I believe we would have beat Atletico Madrid if we'd been 100% on two or three of our players. It wasn't as if it was just Zamora who was injured. It was a couple of others who were taking knocks into the game. And Roy kept faith with them, probably quite rightly, because they deserved it. And, you know, we were undone by Mr. Forlan.
Yeah. Oh, God. I get sick just thinking about saying the name. You know, again, I see him, you know, every once in a while, if someone mentions his name, I get sick. But you know what? Mike, and going back to, you know, that's what's so great about us talking about this now, because, again, it's 5 years, and it's so fun to look back at some of these memories. But I want to get your thoughts, because what's interesting is I was just surprised at the different names. Like you said, Dempsey, okay, I understand why you guys don't see Dempsey as the MVP. I do agree with you on that. But I find it interesting that some brought up Damien Duff. Some brought up Brett Hangwin. You know, again, there were different names coming up, and again, that's what I found fascinating about putting up this question. And does that just speak to the volume, to this team as a whole, Mike? The fact that we don't just have one or two names, we had several names here. Doesn't just show that Europa League team was just a team itself? That's probably one of the reasons why they were able to beat a team like Shakhtar Donetsk and Juventus, some of these other teams. They weren't the most talented team, but they probably played the best together. Does that make sense?
Well, you've answered your own question with the word team, and that's what they were. They were coached to the ninth degree, and any player who was in or out, they knew what their job was. And so if you actually look at our lineups from the beginning of the tournament all the way through, there was suddenly a stage, you know, Sofia at home, I think, where suddenly the penny dropped, and I think Roy thought, God, we're actually going to qualify here if we get some results. And the team actually started to change to the one that we all know. And that's what it was, really. It was a team effort. Everyone played their part from, as I say, from beyond Helga Risa. You know, he played a good number of games. He even had Smalling chip in early on, you know. So Green in as well. You can go through the whole team, you know, lots of players who we would forget about now or write off all played their part. Nevland, who was a sub all the time, you know, he came on as well. And so exactly what you were saying there, it was a team effort, but Guerra was the best player.
Okay, you got Guerra. David and I have Bobby Zamora, and The fans are split. There are many Guerras. Many agree with you, Mike, and some do agree with David and myself, and there are some other names sprinkled in as well. So it's, you know, again, I'm glad that I could do this exercise and put this question up there. We could talk about it. Like I said, I do plan on talking about the Europa League run again on future shows, because I don't see any reason why we can't, you know, and I want to. As, you know, as we look back 5 years later, you know, it's sad in some ways that to see how far Fulham are from that team, but I'm still going to look back and have a smile on my face. All right, guys, let's go to question number two on the Cottage Talk Facebook page. This one's interesting with some very interesting answers. My question that I pose to everyone, which club do you hate the most from any division and why? You know, again, I'm curious what fans think, you know, which team they just dislike the most. It's just an interesting topic, you know, because everyone has their own, you know, I don't like the other club in Fulham. I don't like QPR. I don't like a bunch of teams, but I'm curious what people think about this. So, Mike, I'm going to start with you. Is there a team that you just hate?
Okay, hate's a strong word, but I understand what
dislike strongly?
Dislike strongly, yeah. Okay, well, that's quite an easy question for me, actually. It's going to be Portsmouth. And I really do not, I can't stand them. And it goes back to probably about 1979, when probably my second year of going regular. And their fans had a reputation, Russ, of being real trouble. And they came to the Cottage one day. I think we lost the game 3-0. And they started a fire in the away end, and they charged through the Riverside stand. Then they were into our stand as well in the second half. They were throwing darts. And, you know, it was just a horrible day. It was a horrible day leaving the ground in Putney. And, you know, I've never enjoyed playing Portsmouth. I just can't stand their fans. I don't like their ground. Okay, they did us a favour and let us win 1-0 down there to stay up. But, and I know they've had their problems, but for me, it's Portsmouth all day long. Other teams I can live with, and you know, even the local rivals, that kind of stuff. But there's just something about Portsmouth that, if they, it's horrible to say, but if they cease to exist, I wouldn't bat an eyelid.
Wow, that's good stuff there, Mike. Were you there in 2007-2008 season to keep us up?
Yes, I was, and their fans were very good that day, and, you know, it was a great day for us. But one in 37 years doesn't make it any good for me.
I love it. Great stuff there, Mike. Very, very good take on Portsmouth. Okay, David, to you. I'm curious your thoughts on this question.
Well, obviously, I was thinking to myself when you said about this, I'm thinking you have to be very careful here or it's going to cost you a lot of money, isn't it, this one? You have to be careful
true.
What you say when you're reading
true.
Out the comments.
True, very true.
I mean, obviously, we could just say it, and every time we say it, it costs you a pound, so I could just say
all right,
it. Just,
all right, David, then don't say it. Say it some other way, like we normally do. Do me a favor here.
But that actually isn't going to be my choice because coming from the locality, it was actually quite a friendly rivalry between ourselves and the other team in Fulham. And they don't hate us at all. That's the annoying thing. They really don't hate us. They hate other teams. They look on us like a little brother. And maybe that annoys you sometimes. Maybe it'd be nice if they hate us.
Well, that's what annoys me, David. That's totally what annoys me, but go ahead.
Yeah. So, but the trouble is, they kind of are kind to us. They don't like Arsenal, they don't like Man United, they don't like Spurs, but they're okay with us. The local rivals that probably are much more infuriating are the ha-has, I'm afraid, because they just had this chip on their shoulder with us, it seems. You know, they were nowhere until 1968 or whatever it was. It just happened that we got relegated and they got promoted around the same time. And then they were above us for quite a while. And it just seems that the fortunes went the other way, and we ended up back in the Premier League, and they ended up down. And they seemed to hate us for it, but we were just, you know, they were just keeping our seat warm at that point. So out of the local rivals, I'd say the ha-has I hate a lot more because they have this kind of mentality. I mean, you look on Saturday for a Premier League match, they still had less than we did in the Championship, and they go on about our fans and everything else. You don't get that from the other team in Fulham. So, out of the local rivals, it has to be the ha-has that I would say I hate most. But for some reason, and I don't know why, it's irrational, I've always just loved to hate Spurs. And again, I don't really know why. I just love to see them fail. I think, it's their fans. Their fans are the most fickle fans you'll ever find. They win two games on the trot, you hear them on the radio talking about Spurs for Champions League and everything else. They lose two games on the trot, and my God, it's like doom and gloom. It's doom and gloom for them. Otherwise, I mean, I agree with Mike about Portsmouth in a way. I don't know how many phrases this not to be too insulting, but there's these places, certain places that you would say they were kind of chavvy places, yeah? They seem to be associated with a lower kind of echelon of society. And Portsmouth is one of those places that people would kind of title like that. The other one, of course, is Gillingham, who we have history with.
Right.
So I think in the same vein, you know, there's Portsmouth and Gillingham and other certain places that we just love to hate as well. But in recent terms, you know, my most hated team is, of course, Russ. I've gone around the houses here, but of course it is. And for I don't know really why, but they just shouldn't be beating us, but they always do, and it's Hull City. And I just cannot wait
David,
for Hull.
David, I'm there with you. I was thinking, should I mention them? But I'm going to mention them. Go ahead.
And this is totally irrational. So I don't really hate the other team in Fulham. I hate QPR more. I love to hate Spurs for some reason. I don't like places like Portsmouth and Gillingham, but Hull is just Hull because... I just feel they shouldn't be in the Premier League and they shouldn't be above us and they shouldn't be beating us. And I don't know why. I'm sorry, Hull fans, but that's just how I feel.
David, I'm right there with you with Hull. You know, again, you know how I feel about them for the exact same reasons you said. I don't really even have to add anything to it. You know, again, it's for all of that. I cannot stand that club. I don't think that they deserve to be in the Premier League, especially over us. And it drives me crazy, again, that we lose to a team like Hull. You know, it just drives me insane. So for me, it's Hull. But also, you know, again, it's going to be the other club in Fulham because, again, I get a lot of stick from my father. So that's where that comes from because my father grew up in that town's namesake. You know, and you know, again, his town was that's the name of the town. So again, I would constantly hear talk about it. It used to drive me nuts. So for me, it is the other club in Fulham because of a family issue that I have and that I continue to have. So again, I he always brings that up. Oh, how's Fulham doing? How's my team doing? You know, so I get that all the time. So that's more personal, not for the same reasons. It's you guys, but honestly, David, I'm there with you on Hull. Okay, let's go to the Fulham supporters. These are going to be interesting because they are all over the place. That's why, David, this is your suggestion to open it up to all divisions and just let it out. And that's exactly what I did. So we're going to get all kinds of comments from about different sides. So again, let's start with Chris Cox. This is from the Cottage Talk Facebook page. He says, Derby County, they stopped Super Mac taking us up. Also, Sheffield United always seem to beat us 2-1. David Phillips says Chelskum. I can say that, David, by the way. Ben Hardwick says Brentford. Ben Reed, briefcase Ben, none. I don't hate any team at all. Okay, Ben. Alex Sainor says QPR, traditionally Brentford, but the level of QPR fans' delusions of grandeur, their arrogance without foundation in reality, means it them for me. But if we play Gillingham again, particularly away, that would probably eclipse everything, unfortunately. So he's going QPR and Gillingham's kind of tied there. James Dalton, Stoke, and he agrees with us, David Hull. Both teams, in my eyes, don't deserve to be in the Premier League, or maybe I'm just jealous. Maybe we are. Okay, now this one's interesting. I'm going to read this. This is from our friend Roger Lewis, okay? When I saw this before, you know, again, I was like, I'm gonna read this from Roger. Just bear with me, guys. I just X'd out of it. Here it is. Roger Lewis, Exeter. But the club, not the team. Went to their place to watch Fulham with my wife. The away end is open and only 6 steps deep. It started pouring, and I asked the steward if we could transfer to the stands. They said no. I asked if we could leave the ground and pay to get into the stands. They said we were not allowed to leave the ground before the end of the game. The stewards and police just laughed at my wife's ruined hairdo. I gave my wife my coat, and we were both soaked to the skin. We had to drive back to London in that state. Never got even an apology from Exeter. So for Roger, it's Exeter, and I understand why. Ciarán Elster says it has to be the other club in Fulham. Far too many reasons to list. Dominic Rahman says QPR. Stephen O'Keefe, Brentford, QPR, and that other club in Fulham. Let's see. Steve Butter says, Birmingham City because their fans stoned our coach, claiming Stan Collymore was on our coach and Brentford. Okay. Nick Lawrence, the final one, says, I have vague memories of, however, some Birmingham supporters treated us after Fulham beat Birmingham in the 1975 FA Cup semifinal replay. I hope you blank... Coach crashes in a Brummy accent. Okay, so that's it from the Fulham supporters on the team they hate. David, I want to ask you about Birmingham City. What are your thoughts about those comments first?
excuse me, sorry. Well, Birmingham, I was too young to remember the 75. I was there, but I was too young to remember any specific incidents. I was there with my father and. We had a perfectly nice day out, and I don't remember any argy-bargy at all. I know Birmingham, again, they weren't another team that used to have a bit of a reputation for being rough, but nothing personal. I mean, the only comment I'd have on what I heard there, because I think everyone's entitled to have their own sort of personal memories of things. The Derby one, yes, there was bad blood with us at what happened to find a game this season, but we didn't lose promotion because of Derby. We lost promotion ourselves. It was in our. We were 12 points clear with not long left, not long really, and we threw it away. As a combination of our own play and maybe our chairman's willingness not to spend, I should say. I'm sure Mike will remember that. And say it was frustrating. It's very easy to blame it on Derby, but I blame it on ourselves, that one.
Okay, very good there, David. All right, Mike, to you, do you remember the Birmingham City situation at all a little better than David? I'm curious your thoughts on that, and also just the thoughts on the Fulham supporters on the team they hate the most.
Well, I certainly remember a couple of instances at Birmingham that were mentioned there, and one of them, yeah, me and my father, we went to the game a few years ago now and parked in the car park, which was a mistake. And then as you come out of Birmingham football ground, it goes down a hill, and basically their fans wait on either side of the road, and they run and chat, you know, stone the cars and the coaches and everything that goes down there. Now, on that particular day, I actually bought a Birmingham fanzine to read, and I stuck that in the window of my car on the dashboard, and we never had any colours or anything, and somehow we got away with it. But a car in front of me got stoned and rocked, and it was very scary. So, and also, they tend to sit you on a lower tier, and you have Birmingham fans above you, and they tend to spit on you and throw stuff down at you. So it's not a nice place to go, to be perfectly honest. I don't recall any incidences at Craven Cottage, but they are one of those groups of fans, and Dave will know them, who potentially, you know, there is always trouble. I mean, there's Cardiff, you could name. They've mentioned Gillingham as well as a club which, you know, Fulham fans don't like. We all resented Derby for years. Some of us still do, but there's never been any kind of trouble between us. So, you know, it's the usual suspects when you start talking about clubs that are going to give you grief at games. And it always makes me laugh when there is trouble in cities and they say, you know, they're amazed that Cardiff Leeds, there's been a big punch-up, and you sort of think, well, just ask any fan, and they'll tell you that's what happened between those two sides. So, Birmingham, I can completely understand why people have picked them. For me, it's always about trouble. It's not so much the rivalry of Chelsea or Brentford or QPR, because that always changes. But it's just your memory.
Okay, that's another pound my way. Okay. It's okay, Mike. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just saying, it's what you remember about particular instances. That's for me, you know, I said it's Portsmouth, but I could have said it was Gillingham, and I could have said it was Cardiff. For me, those three teams are very bad.
You know, it's very interesting that you guys bring up teams that give you trouble. You know, you're talking about Birmingham. I can't believe that fans would stone a car, but I shouldn't say that, because that actually, a similar situation happened to me. You know, again, I don't know if you guys are familiar with baseball, but the Red Sox-Yankees rivalry is pretty heated. And as a child, you know, our car at Yankee Stadium after the game got vandalized, and it was scary. And, you know, again, I don't get people that would do that. I don't get people that would wait for you and try to stone your car. I just don't understand that. So I understand any fan that would be upset at that club, you know, and would leave that memory, you know, that terrible memory. You know, the memory that Roger mentioned too. It's like, you know, like stuff like that just drives me nuts. But for me, my reason is obviously different. You know, again, for me, it's personal with my father, and also just can't stand Hull. You know, for some reason, David's with me. We can't stand Hull, and maybe James Downton's correct there, David. Maybe we're jealous because they're still in the league. Maybe that's it.
Well, I have to say on James's other one, Stoke, I would discount them for the way they treated us last game of the season last year. I thought they were fantastic. I mean, I'm sure Mike was probably there.
I heard that.
The Stoke fans were really nice, very, very magnanimous to us, and very kind and friendly and compassionate, really. No real pee-taking, you know, out of us or anything. So Stoke, if you didn't like them before, you have to kind of like them a bit now, I would say. As for Birmingham, Mike, obviously it's a long time since you've been to St Andrews, because we had our own end, and when we were there, it was all nice, safe environment. There's no problems, thankfully. So we had our own stand, one end. There was no tier above us or anything like that. So hopefully they've even moved forward with the times as well a bit now.
Yeah. Yeah, hopefully. But I'm glad that Mike could share that story and everyone could share their story. You know, again, a very interesting topic to discuss which team. You know, again, Mike, I should have phrased it the way that you said that you were basically getting me to say. You know, just strongly dislike instead of hate. Hate's a very strong word. I should say strongly dislike. You know, two words, strongly dislike instead. But anyways, let's move on. And let's start our preview of Bolton. The Bolton Wanderers for the match tomorrow, and just some information on them as we go into this. Bolton are currently 17th, with 9 wins, 7 draws, 13 losses. They've scored 34. They've given up 43. For a goal differential of minus 9, they are at 34 points. Fulham are one position ahead at 16th with 10 wins, 5 draws, 14 losses. They've Fulham have scored 42, and they've given up 50 for minus 8, and our point total is at 35. They're, believe it or not, one interesting little fact about Bolton, their leading scorer is a defender, Matt Mills, with 5 goals. But there are other players that we definitely need to talk about, and we will be talking about that when we go through this preview. They're coming off of a 4-1 loss to Derby County. And what I thought I would do is, David, you'll appreciate this. Guess who I contacted?
Oh, I really can't guess who, Russ. You know.
Okay, well, I contacted our friend Andy Buckley-Taylor, who has a Derby County blog, to get some information for us for this preview because they just played Bolton. So this is, again, this is what Andy Buckley-Taylor shared with me this morning. He basically said this. Bolton initially were a tough defense to break down, with them looking like they were playing 5 at the back. And actually, the stats backed it up, that they actually played 5 at the back. We broke through, and once one goal went in, the floodgates opened. The player to watch for me, although he didn't shine against us, would be Zach Clough. He's a good young attacking player who's already attracting interest from other clubs. Bolton are very strong on the counterattack, and that is their strength. Weaknesses against us was their midfield playing very deep and didn't offer enough support to their forwards. I think Kit needs to play your usual style of football, playing the ball, but being ready to cope with a counterattack. They can be exposed on the wings. Andy's going for a 2-1 Fulham victory on the road. So, again, that's from Andy. And it looks like they have several injuries going into this match. I got this off of ESPN.co.uk, and I'm just going to read this from an article that lists Bolton missed 9 for Fulham clash. I'm just going to read this. William Trotter, thigh, and David Weeder, dead leg, are the latest 2 casualties after the duo came off at halftime in Saturday's 4-1 defeat at Derby. Boss Neil Lennon does not expect any of his other injured players back, so Adam Bogdan, Emil Heskey, Matt Mills, Max Clayton, Mark Davis, Craig Davis, and Darren Pratley are all remain sidelined. Neil Danz is back from suspension, though, while Wanderers are hopeful new signing Sadie Janko will be registered in time. Okay, and it also says that Fulham will monitor the fitness of skipper Scott Parker. Again, that's from ESPN FC, I should say. All right. So that gets us up to date on Bolton, and now we can start our preview. And, Mike, I want to get your thoughts on Bolton. You know, again, Fulham really handled them pretty easily at Craven Cottage. Going into this match, you know, again, they've had a little bit of a resurgence under new manager Neil Lennon. What are your thoughts about them heading into this match?
Yeah, it's going to be a good test for us, and you know, they're on a bad run. They're letting in quite a number of goals, so it will be good to see if we can get a result tomorrow. We've got a great record against Bolton. I mean, they haven't actually scored against us for 6 games, so
wow.
In the league, going past over the years. So it will be disappointing to see that record broken. They started well under Lennon, and actually, you know, Lennon's done a decent job there. And I'm a bit lucky because my father works with a couple of Bolton fans, and they were describing the changes he's made. And what he's done is he's brought in a few youngsters, mainly because of injuries, but just to freshen things up. And initially it worked, but I was looking at some stats today, and actually since the 1st of January, he's only picked up 4 points in 5 games. So you know, we're playing them at the right time, hopefully. And, you know, with their injuries, and although we possibly may be missing Parker still, I feel we should be strong enough. I mean, I always go to Bolton. I'm unfortunately not going tomorrow, but when I have gone, I've always felt quite confident there. And we shouldn't be intimidated with our players. I mean, they're still, they have some experience in their team, but they've also got some youngsters as well. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. But hopefully we don't roll over to a team which is in a bad, is having a bad run. I mean, Kit needs to get a result tomorrow. I do feel
he
that,
does.
You know, especially the way the boards have gone. And I think the players need it just to, you know, get another 3 points and just get away from that, you know, the bottom of the division, really. So, yeah, I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful we're going to do something. And, you know, it's a good one because some fans wanted Lennon as manager. I wasn't keen on him at all. And
I remember
I'm still not. Yeah, I specifically heard an interview with him on Radio 5 before he got the Bolton job, and he just came across as a traditional sort of, you know, chest thumping type manager. You know, it's all about motivation and you know, working hard, that kind of stuff. So I don't think tactically, you know, he's the greatest, but he obviously gets something out of his teams. But yeah, looking for a win tomorrow, definitely.
No, very good stuff there, Mike, and very interesting that you said that they're on a bad run and that we might be catching them at the right time, because, again, we caught them at the right time the last time we played them, so hopefully, you know, we'll see that again, you know, away from Craven Cottage, playing them on the road. Hopefully we will be catching them, like you said, at the right time to get all 3 points. David, what are your thoughts on Bolton just in general?
Well, let's hope we don't do our special where we hand struggling teams an easy 3 points, which seems to be too often for us in the past, unfortunately. Certainly, you know, it's not an easy place to go midweek, somewhere up there, but then we have got a reasonably good record against them. I mean, last time I went there, the wife came with me, of course, and we won. So 3-0, that was just before they got relegated, obviously, the season before. And that day we were much better than them. Obviously, time has moved on. But, you know, we really need to move on from Saturday and the disappointment, because, as I sort of said afterwards, I think Kit picked the right team for Saturday. He picked the best team he had with the players that are available. You can argue the case about Grimmer or Richards at right back. There's not a lot to choose between them, but I think in terms of strength, we were more or less there. And yet, you know, against Birmingham, we didn't really move on. So, I don't really blame Kit for that. So, was it the lack of Parker's composure? Was it the players are just not quite good enough? Did they have an off day? And I think they'll need to step up from that against Bolton. Bolton will be identifying this as a match they can get their season back on track again, I think. They need the points, of course. And they'll look at Fulham and say, hold on, you know, they're a bit up and down. We're at home in front of our own fans. But, you know, they've got 9 players potentially out. And that is a big ask. You know, even squad our size, if we had 9 players out, I think we would, you know, we would struggle because we don't have the strength and depth. So
no, we don't.
I think we've got to be targeting at least a point from there. Really, I think, you know, a defeat will be very disappointing, and it will not help, you know, Kit's detractors at all. I don't see why we can't win it, but I'm sort of worrying. You know, you said, Andy said that, you know, attack them with width down the wings. That's their weakness, but that's not us, is it? That really, at the moment, unless Kit decides to do something radical and change the team. But I don't think he's going to do something too radical. Although there is an argument for obviously maybe resting a couple if needs be, because we've got a tough game on Saturday.
We do, but it's interesting, David, because you know. You know, again, it's not his MO with his team to play with, but you know what? He could if he wanted to, at least, you know, partially. He could, you know, again, he could go, you know, Mike's dying for him just to play a 4-4-2. Maybe, you know, again, maybe this is the team to do it against, but, you know, again, will he do it? I don't know, because he's, you know, he's been pretty set in the diamond, so I don't know if he would do that, but again, you know, Andy knows his football. If he's telling me that you could take advantage of them on the wings, then Kip must know that as well. So, again, that's an interesting thing for us to look for in this match. Will he change the formation, or will he just go with a diamond? Just, you know, again, just very interesting. You know, I'm glad that Andy was able to share his thoughts on it, because now it's got me thinking about that as well. All right, David, right back to you. Let's talk about the ref. Always interested in the ref.
So we have another one with a few controversial remarks. If you Google Gary Sutton, he's a local of mine from Lincolnshire as well. And in the local paper, the Peterborough Telegraph, he's been absolutely slaughtered not that long ago. They were saying the worst ever ref to ref a Peterborough match. And Bournemouth were moaning about him as well not so long ago. But I guess you'd find that with any ref. I mean, you know, look, on Saturday, people was moaning about the ref being poor Saturday. I saw it on Twitter and I was arguing. And when I looked, about three people actually said, no, the referee was very good. They were talking about McCormack being fouled and bars all over the place. But I think it was, you know, it's all about perception, isn't it? Because I felt that McCormack was theatrical and, in fact, that he was the one doing the backing in and looking for stuff. So, you know, you have to take things with a pinch of salt, you see, about the refs. And of course, any ref, even the top refs, have a bad game now and then. And, you know, if in a couple of seasons there's been two criticisms of him, you can't say necessarily he's a bad ref. But as we've not had him at all, it's obviously hard to say, but say Gary Sutton from Lincolnshire, watch out for him. The one I'm dreading, and we haven't got him on Saturday either, thankfully, and he does appear, is a chap called Trevor Kettle. He's been going for years, and he's meant to be absolutely awful. And it'll be just our luck that we will get him sooner or later. But we haven't got him Saturday. I forget who we've got on Saturday. Mark Haywood we've got on Saturday for the Ipswich game. But, yeah, Gary Sutton tomorrow. Say Peterborough hated him, but let's see what he does.
Okay, fantastic. Watch that ref that you're talking about, that's the worst watch. We'll have him against Derby County at the Cottage. That would be just fitting. You know, so, you know, again, because Derby County are probably the best team in the league, that would just not be a good thing. They would need a good ref for that match. All right, but let's get into this. And, Mike, I'm going to start with you. Just in general, what do Fulham need to do to win this match, my friend?
I'm just laughing because it's we have to start like we did the other day and get an early goal. I mean, to settle things down. You know, Bolton fans, they're behind. They're going to get a bit annoyed and a bit frustrated, and hopefully that'll transfer to their team. And we have to start strong. That's what we need to do. We can't be tentative again. And I think he will have to change the formation as well. Be that 4-4-2. Be that, you know, slightly different variation on what he has been playing. Maybe not a diamond, but certainly three in midfield and maybe three up top. Because if they're going to play with three at the back, that means they've got five in midfield or three in the centre. So do you change it to go 4-4-2? I don't think you do, because then you'll find us outnumbered in the centre there. And with the players we have, I don't think that's a good idea. So it's be strong, start the game fast, go for the juggler and try and get an early goal. Yeah, that's the best way. The longer the game goes on without us scoring, I fear for us, to be honest. Because we do look as if we're always going to let a goal in. Although we're quite good rear guard defensive, we let a lot of shots in, and we have to try and reduce that as well. So start early, try and get a goal.
Okay, fantastic. David?
Hi, yes. Sorry, I was just daydreaming, thinking about dinner for a minute there. No, I agree with Mike. I mean, if they're going to play three in midfield, we can't go 4-4-2, because we'd just be overrun in midfield. We'd have a scenario like against Sunderland, I think. So I feel we're going to have to play something along our similar lines. And, you know, as I said yesterday, we almost went to kind of three at the back with wing-backs when we were attacking. Because Tunnicliffe was sitting in between Bodiroff and Hutchinson. And so that's the width is you're totally reliant, obviously, on staff leaders and whoever plays right back at the moment. But that's a sacrifice you have to make, I think, for being strong in the middle. And you know, Mike's right about an early goal. So away from home, I think there's probably less pressure on you to get the early goal, because the home side, you know, if you can frustrate the home side, we saw at Sunderland, didn't we, Mike, that, you know, we were quite dominant first half, and although we didn't score, the crowd were really getting on the back of the team, and, you know, we had the upper hand in every way apart from the goal. So keeping it tight is important, but I think you have to take the game to them as much as you can without, you know, leaving yourself open, and we do leave ourselves a bit open at times, as Mike said.
Right.
So find that balance between being strong but also, you know, being positive.
Okay. Okay. Very good. Very good there. All right. All right, Mike, I'm going to go right back to you. I want to get your starting 11 and your formation. And, you know, again, the last match, I'm glad that you brought this up. The last match, I believe they did play five at the back, and they have played 4-4-2 as well. I went back to check some of the games. So Neil Lennon has used a couple of different formations. So, again, I guess it all depends on what Neil Lennon does. But I'm curious what your starting 11 will be and your formation.
Okay, well, I mean, the players he picks, if you know, I think he should pick it to play against the three at the back. And,
okay.
But the players I would pick, and I suspect he will pick, within a few minutes, if they're playing 4-4-2, he should be able to change it straight
okay.
away. So I'm torn a little bit. I mean, the team I would go actually 4-3-3
okay.
tomorrow. I would go with obviously Bettinelli in goal. I would pick Grimmer. He is my poster boy, you know. Is it? but yeah, I would start him and Stavridis at fullbacks. Hutchison, I would start, but I would give Byrne a game. He hasn't played. He's played one game, I think, in about the last 3 months. We've got lots of games, and if we get an injury to one of the centre backs and he's not match fit because he hasn't had any time on the pitch, yeah, it's just going to be another stone to throw at. Throw him. So I would actually play him tomorrow because Bolton are a little bit more direct as well, and I just think he needs the match time. And so going into midfield, I'd play, saying that Parker's not fit, Tunnicliffe with LVC and Fofana on either side of him, but more central.
Okay.
So you've got three compact midfielders, especially if they're playing with their three midfielders. And then I would have Hugo in the middle. I'd have Ross on the... Well, Ross and Kaka can switch, but I would play Ross and Kakanicic on either wing. So
okay.
I'd start on the left with Kaka and Ross on the right. But then, of course, if they change their formation, we've got the players to go back to a diamond or even go to 4-4-2 to match them up as well. So
very interesting.
It should be quite instinctive for them as soon as they know the way Bolton are going to kick off, really. But, yeah, that would be my lineup and the team I'd go with.
See, I really like that, Mike, because, again, it gives you the flexibility to change, you know, mattering on what your opponent does. So again, your lineup gives you flexibility. I really like that. You know, I see where you're going with a 4-3-3, but if they come out with something else, you have the flexibility to change it and not radically change it because you still have the players that could change. So I do like that. All right. Very good there. David, you still on?
Yeah, I'm still here. Am I? Oh, I should be dialing off in a minute, shouldn't I? But
yes,
yeah.
yes. You should be dialing back, and that's why I actually messaged you. Why don't you dial back in, and I'll bring you back
okay.
on to get your starting 11.
Okay. No way. Yeah.
Okay. I'm just gonna.
Russ, what I'd say, Russ, is
yeah.
the player who has to have an exceptional game tomorrow for me is Ross, because he wasn't that great on Saturday, and. You know, he's the standing captain, and he needs to lead from the front tomorrow. So for me, we need a man and a match performance from him.
Very good, very good. And of course, I forgot to ask you who's going to be your key player, and you have it as Ross McCormack. David, I did a Goldman. I forgot to ask a key player. So before I get your starting 11 formation, give me your key player for the match. Who has to have an exceptional match for Fulham to win this? Again, Mike has Ross McCormack. Very good choice.
Well, I'm going to let you off your Goldman, apparent Goldman, because you've taken care of my phone bill. You saved me running up a bill, so that's great.
Okay.
I didn't hear what Mike said until then, but I actually was going to say McCormack because I think he had a poor game by his standards on Saturday, and he needs to really kind of do stuff for us. Away from home, when you perhaps you need to be a bit more defensive, more compact, more reliant on him to be more creative. I think I don't expect us to be maybe quite as expansive in our play. So, yeah, I agree with McCormack on that one.
Okay.
As for the starting 11, I guess I have the same 11 as Mike, although I tend to think that we should start with the same diamond formation they're used to. But that doesn't mean that we can't obviously switch switch to a, you know, a different shape if we need to do that. And I agree that I think Grimmer deserves to have another go. Why not, you know, even for now? Maybe it's not good for continuity, but rotate him and Richards at right back there, because we have important matches coming until we have Hoogland back. And I see in the report that they said Hoogland and Amabieta might feature, but I don't believe that for a minute.
Okay.
Be more likely to see anyone see Sean Kavanagh make an appearance, perhaps, in midfield. Because I'm not quite sure about RBC, what was happening with him on Saturday. Actually, one thing, sorry, Mike, I don't agree completely. I would stick with Bodiroff, not Byrne. And I take your reasons for Byrne, but I don't like to mess around with the centre-defensive pairing. And I think those two have been working really well. And yes, they could get injured, but then, you know, did we ever say that about Hanglin and Hughes? No. You know, we never said let's give one of them a rest, really. Or I know we weren't doing the show back then, but, you know, it would be unthinkable to have changed Hanglin and Hughes, I think, at that point. You know, let's give Hughes a rest and bring Senderos in, for example, if he's around. But, you know, you're not going to say that, are you? You're just not going to say that. So I'm sticking with Bodroff and Hutchinson,
okay.
Because I think, you know, they only get better together, playing together. So the same for me, the same 11 that that started against Birmingham, except I would give Grimmer the go back in, keep Richards back with a view to playing him on Saturday, perhaps.
Okay.
And just start with the diamond as we did before. But you have the option. You could even go 4-4-2 with that loosely, because LVC can go wide right, and Kakanicic can go left, and you can leave Fofana and Tunnicliffe in the middle, as an example, if you need to do that, or as Mike said, to a 4-3-3 as well. It's just whether there is anyone else that injured. I would like to see Parker back, but if he's not fit, keep him for Saturday. Try and make sure he is fit for Saturday, because that's a big game that we really do want to be winning at home in front of our own fans. I mean, if Parker is fit to play tomorrow night, I'm not sure who I'd leave out, if any. If LBC has got anything issues, put him on the bench then. Maybe even Fofana, but otherwise, no, as I said before.
Okay. Very interesting take there, as always, David. All right, Mike, before I get your prediction, I want to ask about this, because David brought this up. Again, in Kit's – sorry about that. Guys, you still with me?
Yep.
Yeah, I'm still.
Oh, I just pressed a button by accident, of course. Another Goldman for the show. I want to ask you, because in Kit's last presser, he was talking about how he – would be using his entire squad, like I should say, no, his presser, his interview with Sauer, that the games are coming fast. So here's my question. David brought up Hoogland and Amorebieta could feature. Here's my question. Do you think that they might feature in this game? David doesn't think so. I'm curious your thoughts. Do you think we might see them come off the bench or maybe even start, which I don't think will happen, but what are your thoughts about them?
I'll be shocked if they're in the 18. Yeah, and they've both been out for months. I think, you know, we're not going to see them probably this month. I'll be surprised. I think they've got a game this week. They've arranged a friendly for those guys to have another 45 minutes or maybe an hour. So
okay.
I think the earliest we're going to see them is in a few weeks. And Kit does say that he said it a couple of weeks ago. I'm going to use all the players. I'm going to make changes tomorrow. And for the cup game, for the Sunderland game, and then what was it? Two changes. So, part of us wants to see Robert start and Williams get a game, and you know, I suppose it would be nice to see them get a run out as well. I certainly think we're going to see more and more of Roberts as the games progress coming up. But unless he changes formation, I can't see how you can get Roberts and Williams starting on the wings. And, Dembele, I doubt, will come in. And I can't see Woodrow either. But the reason I would change the defence, going back to what David said, is the fact that he doesn't need a game, I believe. But also, the idea of keeping the back five the same is fine. I'm going to change the right back, so I might as well make another change. So that's the reason I would do two changes for the one game.
Not a problem. Not a problem. Then,
but I would
okay.
never send Ross.
Okay. All right, Mike. Right back to you. Give me your prediction for the match.
I got last week completely wrong. I actually think we're going to win 1-0 tomorrow.
Okay. 1-0. All right. David?
I have this dread that we will do a Fulham special and just, like, give them an easy win, much as I don't want us to. It is all going to be about the lineup and how many changes he makes, I think, really, and how we go out there. I mean, if only Zach Knight was still playing for Bolton, then I'd be so much more confident. But unfortunately, even he's given up now. A tight game, probably. I'm actually going to go for a 1-1 draw.
Okay, you're going to go for the draw. Okay. Before I give my prediction, I'll just share some predictions from the Fulham supporters on the Cutterstock Facebook page. Tomina Robbins says, ever since we last played them, they've been doing better in the league. It will be difficult, but I think we can win 2-1. Yavor Alexiev, Bolton, are there for the taking. 2-0 Fulham with goals from Hugo and Fofana. Eitan Rederb has 3-1 to Fulham. Seiko finally gets a goal with Kaká and Ross adding to the party. James Costin, 6-1 to Fulham. I have no logic behind it, but what the heck? Alf Russell does the same exact thing, 10-0 to Fulham. Obviously, he's just kidding around. Roger Lewis, a nervy 2-1 win. McCormick to get both of our goals from the number 10 position just to confound us. Okay. Now time for my prediction. I'm going to go for scoreline that's, David, it's going to shock you. I'm going to go 2-0 to Fulham. And David, goal scorers are going to be Ross McCormick and Seiko Fofana.
We'll see.
Who's
in the post-match on Wednesday with you?
Right now, we're not sure. So we will see what happens, David. Right now, I don't have anyone to do it. So that's up in the air right now. Hopefully, I will find someone to do the post-match show with me on Wednesday. If not, we will...
Yeah, I'll be playing football, so I can't even send you abuse in while you're live on air.
I understand that, David. I will try to find someone to co-host with me for that show, my friend. Don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. All right, guys. Let's wrap up this show. First of all, Mike, again, as always, thank you for joining us so late. I really appreciate it, you coming on. And also, is there anything that you're going to be running coming up soon on Viva El Phone?
I've got a couple of things in the pipeline. I'm working on the financial fair play, trying to get that together. But it's a minefield, and I'm cautious about publishing anything which is really incorrect. So hopefully the club are willing to help in that regard, but they're not that helpful at the moment. But we have asked the Fulham Sports Trust have asked the club to publish some kind of outline on financial fair play so that fans can get their head around it because there's so many different versions of it. So I'm working on that at the moment.
You know, and I'm looking forward to reading that and you finding more information about it because I'm curious the effect that it's having in all the divisions. You know, again, it's something that again, I hear so many people talking about. I'm curious if it really is affecting teams. Mike, you know, again, you know, from the Premier League to the Championship to League One, I'm curious how it's all playing out. So I will be looking for that when you get all the information. Hopefully the team will share that with you because it's something that is actually very curious to me exactly what's going on with it because I do hope that financial fair play has a positive effect. I do. I really hope it does. I want more information on it, so I'm glad that you're going to try to get that. That's very good. David, I'll be talking to you soon, my friend. I've been talking to you a lot this week, by the way.
You know, that's right. I'm looking forward to seeing Mike's stuff. Obviously, the big one for us, I think, as a Fulham fan, is more than Fulham. It's the QPR scenario because there's all this talk that they have to pay £50 zillion pound fine if they get relegated or they get relegated to the conference or who knows what the actual rules are. So, yeah, I'm interested by that as well. And obviously, it has a bearing on our own sort of fortunes because, you know, we may yet need to spend heavily if we want to get back to the Premier League, and that may have its ramifications for us. So, yeah, it's very important. But I think in principle, I agree with the kind of what they're trying to do with the fair play, because the spending in football has become madness, really, in recent years. It's just unfortunate that some clubs seem to be able to get around it for some reason. But that's great anyway, and I look forward to speaking to you as well, and let's, fingers crossed, you know, if you do get stuck on the post-match and you can move it to another time, I can probably help you out, but
okay.
Definitely not 6 o'clock on a Wednesday. But and Mike,
I got
to speak to you as well, as always, and Russ, thanks very much.
Oh, not a problem, David. And listen, thank you guys for doing this with me. As I look out my window, all I see is snow. So this has taken my mind off of that I've got huge amounts of snow in front of my house. So thank you very much, both of you, for doing this with me. I really appreciate it. Before we go, just a reminder, you can download Cottage Talk on iTunes on the Stitcher Radio app, which is available on the iPhone, iPad, and the Android. Also, you can now listen to Cottage Talk on the TuneIn app, which is available at most app stores for your mobile device. That's how I listen back to the show. Well, that's it for this episode. For David and Mike, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you again for listening to Cottage Talk. Cheers, guys.
Cheers, Russ. Cheers, David.
Thanks, guys. See ya.
Take care.
Now war is declared.